Matthew 22, 1-14 exegetically constitutes not exclusively, but chiefly a warning. I've already gotten one phone call from a pastor on this saying, how the heck do I preach this one to a Christian congregation? So we'll make some suggestions about that in just a second, but maybe we'll read through the text beginning at 22:1. The context is the rising, well, not rising, it's risen, the waves of opposition to Jesus. And so the last Sunday's gospel, of course, was the parable of the wicked tenants. And then after this parable, you get the Pharisees coming, trying to ensnare Jesus. So this is, it's a judgment context. There's no doubt about it. And again, I think there's a way to preach that to a Christian congregation as well. So let's just kind of plow through the text fairly quickly. It's not too bad. So verse 1, and answering, Jesus again said, or spoke in parables to them, saying... And as he does often, it begins a parable of the reign of heaven with aorist indicative passive of hamayao. Translate, the reign of heaven has become like a man, a king. And see that too, it's already happened. The judgment is coming upon Jerusalem and upon the religious leaders of the nation. So again, it really nails it down into the context. Like to a man, a king, anthropo basile. Hustis is normally just like the relative pronoun who did or gave a gamus. The plural is an idiom. It just means wedding feast. And then a dative of advantage for the son of him. Verse 3, and he sent his slaves for this purpose to call tous keklemenus. Ace tus gamus, to call to the wedding feast those who were called. It's redundant, but I think it actually makes a point. These are the people who were supposed to respond. They had already been called, and now he's going to finally call them. They've been invited. I think it often the English translation slips from call to invite, but the repetition there, I think, is somewhat emphatic. And then that makes the next clause all the more stunning. Kai here, linking a positive with a negative clause, is usually translated but. So, but they were not willing to come. It's a shocking statement. I mean, these are the people who had been called, right? By the king. You don't just diss the king. That's the point. You can ignore your friends if you want, not too often, and you can not show up the week before lectionary lunch and stiff arm your colleague, but don't spurn the invitation of a king. Well, this unusual king, he does give up. Verse 4, again he sent alus dulus, other slaves, saying, apatas, say to the ones who have been and are called, look, look, the meal of me, the dinner of me, I have prepared, hetoimaka, and it's in a prepared state. Perfect, right? Now we have to supply some verbs for this next clause. The bulls of me and the fatted things of me, supply are te thumena. This is from thuo, means to sacrifice, or just more secularly, to slaughter. It's a perfect participle. Passive, and it's acting like an adjective. So supply are slaughtered, and panta hetoima, all things, supply are ready. Duta, come on into the wedding feast. Verse 5. But they, ameleo means to neglect or to not care about. But they, because they didn't care, apelthon, went away. Now we have hus, 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 which is one, another, another. Literally, who, on the one hand, to his own field. Who, on the other hand, to his store or his market. Verse 6. But they, the remaining ones, the loipoi, after they seized his slaves, they treated them shamefully. They hubrizoed them. And they killed him. Verse 7. This is what happens when you spurn the generosity and the gift of the king. Okay, see, this is the entryway. The king has done everything. It's all ready. It's a gift, you don't need to bring any presents, you know, and that links with Isaiah 25. But the king Orgizte, this is from Orgizo, which means to get mad, he became mad, and sending his, literally, armies, or troops, Apollesen, this is from Apollyme, means to destroy. Apollyon is the destroyer in Revelation, right? It's aorist indicative. It's a very strong verb, so you usually have to look it up. He destroyed the murderers, those ones, and the city of them. This is from Empipremi, of all things. And it's an aorist, a very strong irregular verb, and it means to burn. And he burned their city. Have a nice day. I mean, really, you don't spurn the generosity of the king. I mean, either culturally or theologically, obviously. Well, but the king still wants to give. See, this is the gospel in this text. He loves to give. He wants to give a party, and he just wants people to come. Right? Verse 8, then he says to his slaves, on the one hand, the wedding is ready, but those who had been and were called were not worthy. To be worthy is just to believe. To be worthy is just to say, the gift is for me. Remember when the apostles are sent in Matthew 12, peace be upon this house, and if that house is worthy, let your peace remain. Well, the only thing that makes a person worthy, it's kind of like the catechism, he who has faith in these words, right? I mean, it actually works quite swell in that regard. So, verse 9, therefore, Poruissa, journey into the de-exoduses. There's this debate over what exactly this means. Apparently, some people think it means the roads that cut through the city. The lexicon actually suggests that it means the exits that go through the wall into the countryside. So they go through the wall and go out that way. But whatever the precise force is, it's clear that we're not to gather from just one small part of the region. But go unto the byways of the ways, I think is how King James renders it. And note the open-ended activity of the master's servants. Hasus eon heureta, as many as ever you may find. It's a conditional relative clause. Heureta is the aorist subjunctive of heurisco. As many as ever you may find, kalesita, imperative, call, invite into the feast. So again, this isn't like a king who's easily set off. It's not some cranky guy, you know, that you got to be careful when you're dealing with him. He wants everybody to come. Verse 10, and going out after they had gone out, those slaves into the ways, sin egagan, they gathered all whom they found. And here, in a sense, is a note of grace. Paneirus te kai agathus, both evil and good. O kingly love, right? The feast is ready. Come to the feast. And kai epleiste ha gamas ana kemenon. Epleiste is from pimplemi, of all things, and it means to fill. It's kind of a synonym of plerao. And the wedding hall or the wedding was filled. And now this participle is a little deceptive. The scribes must have felt it too, because as you can see, there's an insertion marker there. And if you cast your eye down, it's nothing more or less than the article, which would make it clear that this was a substantized participle. The wedding feast or the wedding hall was filled of those who were reclining. But you don't need the article, just that it would make it clearer. And of course, at a nice party, you don't sit at chairs the way we're doing now, but you recline on one elbow, and everybody looks like Charlton Heston and Elizabeth Taylor. A young Charlton Heston and a young Elizabeth Taylor. Verse 11, and the king entering in for the purpose of beholding those who were reclining, Aden, he saw there an anthropon, uk en de dumenon en de megamu. He saw there a man Now, the uk is a little surprising in negating a participle. Normally, may in the New Testament's idiom would negate a participle. We'll just take it that way. He saw a man who was not clothed, or had not put on and was not in a clothed position with the garment of a wedding. And he says to him, friend, just look it up in Matthew, there's a little edge here probably. Friend, pos eis elthes hoda me ekon endimagamu. How did you enter here even though you do not have, take the participle concessively, the clothing of a wedding? Ha de ephimose, and he was phimaod, he was smuzzled, he was silent. Okay, now at this point I have to take away everybody's sermon. Because, as you've probably heard 1,000 times, it was the custom in those days for the king to provide a wedding garment. And there's simply no evidence for that. Well, there's a tiny, tiny, tiny bit of late rabbinic evidence. So, I'm sorry to have to say this, but to be responsible exegetically, you probably can't say that. We just don't know that much about wedding customs. You could pretend that it was true, but you'd just be pretending, right? What I think any number of commentators just suggest here, what is the garment of a wedding? It's just your best outfit. You know, if you own a tux, you wear a tux. If you own a nice sports shirt, you wear a nice sports shirt. There's not one kind of garment here. But this fellow apparently is dressed in dirty clothing. In other words, he has shamed the king. He's not treating this like a wedding feast. Right? He doesn't care. He's like the other guys. Right? When asked about it, this is telling, he has nothing to say. He doesn't say, I'm sorry. He doesn't say, please forgive me. He has nothing to say. That's interesting. Right? You're never quite sure how far to push all the details of a parable, but that seems important to me. Verse 13. Tata, then the king said to his diakonois, to his servants, Desantes is aorist from participle from deo. After you bind of him the feet and hands, ekbalata, throw him out, eis taskatas ta exotra, into the darkness, that which is outer, farther out. A favorite Matthean idiom. Eke estai, there. The klauthmas weeping and the grinding of teeth will be. Why? Verse 14. Poloigar eisin kletoi. For the called ones, many are the called ones, but few are the chosen ones. You've probably heard it said that in the epistles, to be called is the same as to be elect. Right? So Paul can call believers the same thing. In the Gospels, called is to be invited. It's to be exposed to Jesus and to hear his invitation, come to me. But not all those who are called end up believing. So there's a different use of the term there between the Gospels, in general, between the Gospels and the Epistles. So the parable ends on a grim note, right? And I think you can't ignore that. The man without the wedding garment ends up, I think, virtually in the same condition as those who had originally been called and who were killed by the king and their city was destroyed. Well, what do we, you know, this is the gospel of the Lord, right? I think it would be a mistake to just leave the note of judgment. I think it should be preached. Historically, I think it'd be important to ground the parable. This is what happened to the religious leaders and the nation that they led astray in chiefly rejecting Jesus of Nazareth. You can't spurn the king's generosity with impunity. You can't treat his wedding, his invitation, as if it is something of no account. Right? And even after that terrible event of AD 70, which of course is the fulfillment of the first part of the parable and the judgment there, the generosity of the king, again, it's, you know, every alm, every goy, right? The whole earth, right? And so that would be a nice link with the Isaiah text. But don't let anyone think that the generosity of the king can be thought to be of little account, right? Because there will be those on the last day who made that mistake. Right? And so you have to kind of make a specific application here. You could make any number of them, I think, of what that would look like for someone to spurn the generosity of the king. You could go to, for instance, to the fourth commandment. We should fear and love God, or the third commandment, that we may not despise preaching in His word, but hold it sacred and gladly hear and learn it. Any form of synergism probably could be seen as spurning the generosity of the king, as if what Christ had provided were not sufficient in itself. But it is a sober note, and as we march toward the end of the church here, that's not inappropriate. Let the one who thinks he stand take heed lest he fall. Right? The Corinthians had this problem. And so a response to the generosity of the king is a humble gratitude. I wonder what the guy should have said. You know, this is kind of filling in a gap. You probably don't know. How did you get in here? What if the guy had said, I sneaked in under false pretenses. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Well, I think I know what the king might have said. He would have said, welcome to the feast. So it is an interesting and challenging text. There is good news in here, and again, it's in the generosity. But there is also a warning to believers even today not to begin to slide into carelessly and callously taking God's generosity in Jesus for granted. So repentance, faith, is always the order of the day as we wait for the final feast when death is swallowed up. Right? Okay, that's good. We'll stop there. Tomorrow, Hebrew Club. Same room, same iTunes U site. Come on.